Good afternoon to everybody. We are on the 12th in an ongoing series of Shurim on the Yud Gimel Ikrim, and we are now past the halfway mark as we move into Ikra number 7 of 13. So we're now, if you like, we've turned the corner and we're moving towards the end, although there's a long way to go before we're anywhere close to the end, and I don't expect to get to the end any much before the summer, really. But for now, we're going to be starting the 7th Ikkah. I will be taking 2 shiurim on the 7th Ikkah, so today is me really preparing the ground. I'm not going to reach any firm conclusions today, but you need today in order to get next week. So if you don't come to a feeling that you've got a full, if you like, presentation this afternoon, that's because you're correct, you won't have a full presentation, but you will hopefully have what it takes to get to the answers next week. Now, the Rambam, as you're well aware, writes his Ikrim, these summaries of the 13 principles of faith of Judaism. The Rambam, the first person really to ever summarize what the Jew has to believe as far as he's concerned in order to gain a place in the community and a place in the world to come. And the Rambam writes these in his introduction to the 10th Perek of the Mishnah, the 10th Perek of the Mishnah in Sanhedrin. As I said a few times, the Rambam wrote a commentary on the Mishnah, and when he got to the 10th Perek of Sanhedrin, he said, no, I can't just write a commentary here, I have to write an introduction, and this forms, with other things, the 13 Ikrei Hadat, the Ikrim of Faith. The faith is a bad word, religion really, Ikrei Hadat. The 7th Ikkah is by a long way the longest that he writes. Many of the Ikrim are 4 or 5 lines. You've seen them summarized. You've seen them wrote on the top of the each sheet. The 7th Ikkah probably contains more words than the most of the other Ikrim put together, which obviously means that there's something going on with the 7th and the 8th Ikkah. The 8th Ikkah is Torah Min HaShamayim. The Rambam really wants to drive home and wants to get clear. And we're going to read today the 7th Ikkah in 2 parts. And there's something else in between. I'm going to show you some psukim. And I am going to give you some guidelines for how we're going to deal with next week's shiur. So, Nava, take one of these. And let's start at the very beginning. I've brought you this in Hebrew and English. The English is not a direct translation of the Hebrew because it is a translation from another source. So they've got slightly different ways of translating than I would choose. And there's even a line in here which is not in the Hebrew, which because it appears in different versions in slightly different ways. But the Hebrew translation is Rav Yitzchak Shilat. His translation that is a modern Hebrew translation from the Arabic done over the last few years and is widely accepted to be one of the most accurate translations that there is based on the manuscripts that we have. Let's read together. Excuse me, I'm still trying to get rid of my cough, as you can hear, but hopefully we're on the right track. Hayesod HaShavi'i, the 7th principle, says like this. Nevuas Moshe Rabbeinu is the Nevua of Moshe, our rabbi. Vahu, and that is as follows. Lahamin Shehu Avihem Shalakol HaNevi'in. He is the father of all Nevi'in. We'll have to work out what all these things mean. What does he mean he's the father of all the Nevi'in? Shalafanov, who went before him. What kind of Nevi'in went before Moshe? Examples? Abraham, Yitzchak, Yaakov, etc. Sarah. Ushala Acharav, and after him as well. Of course, of which there were thousands, if not millions, of Nevi'im after Moshe Rabbeinu. Kulam hein tachtav b'madrega. They are all on a lower level than him. Now, lest you be lulled into a false understanding that means that Moshe Rabbeinu was the same as the other Nevi'im, but more so, the Rambam is going to be at great pains to explain to us that is not true. The way that Nevuah worked for the other Nevi'im was not at all the way that Nevuah worked for Moshe Rabbeinu, which we're going to see much more of last time. If you recall from my last year, you will remember that Nevuah for the other Nevi'im was a system, if you like, the Rambam explained in great detail, whereby there was a broadcast coming through from all parts, all places, in a kind of isotropic background radiation. And there was little you here, the Nevi'ah,
sitting there in Midrash Rachel, waiting for some inspiration. It's short, that skirt, really.
Okay,
stylish Nubia. And the Nubia is tuning herself up to the level where suddenly she makes contact with this ambient Nebuah coming down from all directions, and she then becomes a Nebuah. Now, the Rambam is going to tell us how the Nebuah in Moshe Rabbeinu works, and it's not like this. And he's going to explain how. Today and next time. So first of all, he says he's the father of all prophets. He's way ahead of the rest. He is in a different league. He's on a different madrega. V'hu bechir Hashem mikol min ha'anoshi. He is the most chosen person by God of the entire human race. It's an interesting thing to say. The Moshe Rabbeinu has, if you like, he's chosen amongst all mankind for a very specific task. Hamasig mimenu yitale, he understands from God. Yoter, more, mimasha hisig v'yasig, kol adam, more than any other human being did or will understand. Shenimtza, whoever existed, v'she yimatze, or whoever will exist, or where they would comprehend. Now, v'shehu alav ha-shalom, hiflik behit alut min ha-anoshir. He was distinct in exaltedness, in his level, from all other mankind, ad shehisig ha-madrega ha-malachit, until he himself understood on the level of a malach. Now, you will remember last time I told you that normal nevuah means tapping into the malach. What you get when you go online with normal nevuah is you suddenly come into contact with the malachim. These things coming down are malachim, meaning, as we talked about, not white fluffy wings with halos, but emanations of thoughts coming out of God. You connect with the malachim. So what did Moshe do? It's not that he just connected them with the malachim, he goes on to say. V'nihiyeh b'madregat ha-malachim. He himself became one of the malachim. And we have to understand, what does that mean? Like, Moshe didn't connect through the system whereby he becomes connected to the malach and thereby gets the drip down feed. He became a malach, which implies he was directly then connected to God. And what does it mean he became a malach? He was a physical person, as we'll see in a minute. Loi nish'ara loi mechitza shalok kara'a. There was no barrier left that he wasn't able to tear through. And we'll see next time from the 7th chapter of the Shemona Parochim, the Rambam wrote another famous introduction, which is the introduction to Pirkei Avot. And in the 7th chapter, this is called the Shemona Parochim, the 8 chapters. In the 7th of the 8 chapters, he also deals with Nevuah. He explains this idea of tearing down the Mechitzas, and he says Moshe Rabbeinu tore all of them down pretty much. Yes.
If he was chosen from all mankind, from all the pack of mankind, so he could be a person who was not Jewish to lead the Jewish people to understand.
Why do you say that?
Because it was from all the mankind.
Yeah, he was. Yeah, I understand what you're saying now. He was not just a person sent to the Jewish people. He was sent to all of mankind to give them something called the Torah. Correct. It happens to be the Jewish people were the people that. The conduit through which the Torah was given to the world. That's because, if you read Rav Hirsch and other people, the world messed up so many times through Adam and Noach and the flood, etc., that the world needed a group of specialists like the Jews to help the rest of the world come to its full conclusion. The idea of Jews and non-Jews and the Jews being the chosen people, or one of the ideas, is very much this idea that the Jews were chosen to lead the rest of the world to fulfillment, and Moshe Rabbeinu was the one who was chosen. So in that sense, Moshe is the leader of the Jews and the leader of the entire world. And by the way, a billion Muslims out there and a billion Christians out there officially believe that Moshe Rabbeinu received the Torah on Har Sinai. A lot larger than the number of Jews that actually believe that. Even if all the Jews in the world believe that, it would still be a lot larger. Okay, but that's their theology. Now, we go on. So he became a malach, and there were no barriers left. I should have put numbers on the lines, I'm sorry. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, I'm 5 lines down. V'loi ikfoi ma'akev gufani.
there was no physical thing holding him back. That didn't mean he wasn't physical, but it meant that his physical body didn't interface between him and God. The loy pagamu shum chesron, and there was no defect that held him back. Loy ma'at v'loy rav, whether great or small. V'nitbaklu mimenu hakochot, and this is very important. There was completely removed from him hakochot hadimyoniim, all imaginative forces. The hachushim, the hasagoto, on all sensory forces in the way that he perceived things. The nidham kocha hamitorer, okay, and the all of these how can I explain this? His personal emotive, if you like, forces were stilled, were removed. The nishar, and all that remained was seichel bilvad, pure intellect. Now, as opposed to a normal prophet, which we're going to touch on again later, where whatever is filtered through that prophet's mind, it's filtered through, says the Rambam, different parts of the brain. There's the what he calls the imaginative, okay, faculty. It's not meant to be anatomical, this, obviously. And the intellectual, okay, intellectual faculty. And Nevuah is coming streaming through these things, which is why what comes out of a normal Navi is a whole mixture of really interesting images and ideas. Some of them are a bit dreamlike, and some of them are parables and metaphors and all that kind of thing. Moshe Rabbeinu has none of this process as the Rambam. All of his imaginative, sensory, emotive faculties are stripped away from him when he's having whatever we call nevuah. All he is a big brain. Okay? Seichel bilvad. Now, we go on. That's why it says that he spoke to God without the intermediary of the Malachim. He didn't connect to God through the Malachim, he connected directly. And I really wanted to go into this in enormous length, he says, this wonderful topic. To unlock all of the secrets of the Psukim in the Torah, and to tell you what it means that God spoke to Moshe mouth to mouth. Which, if you think about it, it's funny. What does it mean, mouth to mouth? You don't speak to people mouth to mouth. You speak to people mouth to ear. But Moshe had a communication with God mouth to mouth. We'll get to that in a minute. The Kol Zeh HaPasuk, and this whole verse, V'zul Asa Mi'ano, and all the other verses like it. I wanted to write the whole book on this. Lulei She'ra'iti Ki Elan Yanim Dakim Ma'od. But I realized these things are extremely fine, extremely detailed. V'itztarchu L'harchava Rabba, we'd need to go on forever about it. We'd need to have introductions and ideas and explanations. We'd have to first explain what is a malach, the chiluk madrukatehem, and all the different levels of malachim, min habore, and why they're different from God. A malach isn't God, why not? And I'd have to explain the soul fully, the kol chokatech, and all the forces of the soul. And I'd have to explain the way that all the malachim, all the neviim, excuse me, explain God and the malachim. And even if I did this in the quickest possible way, it would be hundreds and hundreds of pages. And he says, that's not what I'm trying to do here. Don't forget what he is trying to do. He's giving you an introduction to his commentary on the Mishnah. It's just meant to be a quick guide to understanding the Mishnah. So he says, what am I going to do? So he says, now he tells you what he's going to do. Lefikach, therefore, anichehu lemakoma, I'm going to leave it for now, for its correct place. In besefer perush hadrashot, I'm going to write a book explaining all the psukim, ashe yadati lechabro, which I fully intend to write. Or besefer hanuvua, or I'm going to put it in my book about prophecy, that I've already started writing. Or b'sefer, I'm going to write it in my book, the Perush Eilu HaYesodos, which I'm going to dedicate to explaining all of these ideas. Three great books to look out for in the Rambam. The book that he's going to write about the Psukim, the book that he's already started writing about prophecy, and the book that he's proposing to write about all of these major ideas. Where are all those books? The Rambam wrote this. He wrote the Mishneh Torah, which is Halacha. He wrote the Moreh Nevuchim, which we'll talk about next time. Is one of those, one of the books he says here? Or are these books that he never wrote? And if he never wrote them, why did he leave this in? Because we know that he went over the Yud Gimel Ikrim all the way through his life and annotated them. There are cross-references in the Yud Gimel Ikrim, which he wrote at the beginning of his life, to the Moreh Nevuchim, which he wrote at the end of his life. Why? Because clearly, and we have the actual manuscripts of the Rambam, we can see that he added stuff in later in life because he went over them. So why didn't he just add in here these books which I was going to write, but never, you know, I was too busy being a doctor and I never wrote them. All the books which I'm still thinking. No, he left this in. All these beautiful books he's going to write, which sounds like he wrote them. Or did he? We'll talk about that next time. Now, excuse me. What the Rambam is describing here about Moshe Rabbeinu is really truly astounding. Because the Rambam wants us to understand it's not good enough to just understand, oh yes, God gave Moshe the Torah on Mount Sinai. At the end of the day, what most Jewish people understand about Mount Sinai is basically that. God gave Moshe the Torah on Mount Sinai. And even if you speak to people who've been in Jewish learning for years and years and years, they're usually unable to elucidate that or explain that in any more detail. And the Rambam clearly is telling us that's just not good enough. You have to have an understanding of the way the Torah through Moshe works to be considered one of the thinking people of the Jewish nation. To get your place in Olam Haba. If you don't understand this right, if you think Moshe Rabbeinu is a Navi like Avraham Avinu is a Navi, like this, he says you're a heretic. Now why? Why so important to understand this? So we'll talk more about this, but for now, just understand that first point. The main point coming out of that is that other Nevi'im worked through their imaginative faculty as well, but Moshe Rabbeinu was one big brain, it seems. Now, let's have a look at these psukim. I brought you here seven psukim from the Torah, which the Rambam will bring in different places. These are all verses which deal with the issue of Moshe's Nevuah. Some of them will be very familiar to you. Let's look at them now so that we're familiar with them again, and we'll be able to bring them into play later. Number two. V'diber Hashem el Moshe, panim el panim. God spoke to Moshe face to face. Ka'asher yidaber ish el re'ehu, just like you speak to your friend. Which is funny, because I know what face to face means. And I speak to all the people I speak to face, not just my friends. So why the psukim needed to put that in? It seems almost like a trivial chasa chalila addition, just like you speak to your friend. So we have to understand, what does it mean Moshe spoke to God face to face? What does face to face mean? And what does it add when it says, just like a person speaks to their friend? This is being described when Moshe is on top of Har Sinai in the Chet HaEgel with the golden calf. Okay, the issue of the golden calf, where Moshe is davening for forgiveness for the golden calf. This is describing Moshe's Nevuah. Then, later when he comes down the mountain, we see a very interesting thing, number three. By Heber Redis Moshe Mehar Sinai, when he comes down from Har Sinai, Ushnei Luchos Ha'edus B'Yad Moshe, and he was holding the two tablets of stone in his hand. Beridat Toimin Ha'har, when he came down from the mountain, Moshe Lo Yada, what he didn't know, was Kikaren Or Panav B'Dabro Ito, that his face was shining with beams of light when you spoke to him. When God spoke to him, his face had been given these beams of light. So Moshe is described as having a face which is actually now radiating, physically radiating light. This is not just some kind of a parable, because the psukim go on to deal at the end of Sefer Shemot there, that he actually had to construct a veil, like a balaclava for his, probably don't call it a balaclava in America, but you don't know what I mean. But it's like something that goes over your face. Yeah? He actually had to walk around with this veil over his face. If you think about it, you know, your interactions with Moshe Rabbeinu is talking to a man in a mask. Until he taught Torah, when he took his mask off and he was face which is shining light. And he didn't realize this until he came down. Fine. Four. Ubavon Moshe al Oyel Moed says later, when he would go into the Oyel Moed, Ledaber Ito, to speak with God, Vayishma es kol hakol, he would hear this voice, Medaba Eilav, speaking to him, and the Rambam at the beginning of the Morad of Ochim and other Meforshim pains to explain to us that this is not a voice in a physical sense, and it is not speech in a physical sense. Me'al HaKaporis, but he came from over the Kaporis. What was the Kaporis? 10 marks, 10 points for the Kaporis? The curtains, the paroches, which is the same word. There's no such thing as dyslexia in Hebrew, by the way. If you put the words the other way around, I mean, there is such a thing as dyslexia because it's spelled wrong, but they are related. Not like in English, when you put the letters the wrong way around, the words just messed up. Parochus and Kaporis are really connected. There's something called metathesis. You ever come across this? Metathesis? Metathesis. Which doesn't, as far as I'm aware, exist in English. But it's where letters, consonants in Hebrew words flip around, but the word retains a similar or identical meaning. For example, keves is a sheep, and kesef is a sheep. In English, you know, if you write sheep like this, and, you know, speak, you know, like this, all of that, it just doesn't work. But in Hebrew it works. You've got also simla, okay, simla is a dress, and silma is a dress. You have quite a few examples like this. Anyway, parochis and kaporis is one of them. The parochis is the curtain, and the kaporis is? No. The kaporis is a physical thing. It is the lid of the Aron Kodesh. The Aron Kodesh is the box in which the luchos are. On the top of the box there's a lid, and on the top embossed into the lid, not embossed either, but like part of the lid, are two gold kruvim, okay? And that lid is the space, if you like, through which it says God spoke to Malach the Paris Asher al Aron Aedis, which is on top of the Aron, mibein shnei kruvim, from between the two kruvim, that hole, that space, was the space through which the information came. V'yidabelav, that's how he spoke to him, which is really fascinating how that works. That is somehow the connecting point between this world and the next world or another world. Even though if you walk around it, of course, you know, you can walk around it and there's nothing on the other side. But when you communicate through it, suspect that all great sci-fi images really came from this. This idea of the wormhole is, I think, brought down here. Yes?
It's a little bit off topic, so if... Okay. The Kerubim, did they have, face, or it was just a shape?
Two faces. Two faces, one male, one female. Representing, according to the Meforshim, the love affair between HaKadosh Baruch Hu and the Jewish people. And their embrace was representative of that love that exists. Just like the love between a young husband and his young wife, that is the love between God and the Jewish people. That's just some very beautiful images. In fact, it says that on the Yamim Tovim, when the Jewish people came up to the temple, they would open all the doors like open parallel to each other. So if you had them all open at the same time, could see right through from the outside to the Kodesh Kodoshim. They would open all the doors so people could see the Kerubim hugging each other, and they would say to the Jewish people, look, this is what HaKadosh Baruch Hu feels for you and what we feel for him. They were like hugging, embracing like this, and beneath the hug was this airspace 10 tefachim high through which was the communicator. It's actually very beautiful that the Dvar Hashem comes to us from the hug of God for the Jewish people. It's actually very, very beautiful ideas. There are all sorts of beautiful ideas like that, which can be, you know, developed even further. The imagery, in fact, is unbelievable. There's even an image, where you might find this is a bit strange, but this is brought down in the Midrash, that when the curtain was actually closed and the Aron Kodesh was inside and you couldn't see it, all you could see of the Aron Kodesh were the two poles which poked into the curtains, okay? So from the outside, all you could see was this kind of shape with like two poles. And it says, Chazal, this was an allusion to the idea that we were actually breastfeeding from the Aron. The idea that this was the mother, this was the source of milk for us. All these images are actually really fascinating. Love images and mother-child images, lots of stuff going on here. But that's not for now. Number five. Vayomer, and he says, God says, Shimuna, what's going on here? This is when Miriam complains that Moshe has separated from his wife. And Miriam says, this is not acceptable. You know, we're also Nevi'im. We don't separate from our husbands and wives. Why has Tipperah been left in the cold? And God appears to them suddenly, and he says the following, Vayomer Shimu na dvarai. Listen to me, he said to Miriam and Aaron. In ye nevi'achem Hashem, if you have a nevuah from God, the mar'ah, Allah, the mar'ah alav, excuse me, when you see God, et vada b'chalom adabim, okay? When you are shown, if you like, an image of God, you're shown that in some kind of a dream. Loichein avdi Moshe, that's not true of Moshe. B'chol beisi ne'eman, he goes everywhere in my house. Which actually is a very interesting simile as well. Moshe goes everywhere. You come into the front room and sit down and do as you're told. But Moshe, he's got the full house at his disposal. Okay? B'chol beisi ne'eman hu. Per el per adabebot. I speak to him mouth to mouth. Umar eh, the lob chidot utzmunat Hashem yavit. I don't speak to him in riddles. Utzmunat Hashem hatzabi yavit. He actually is able to perceive the image of God. This is what God's saying about Moshe. Umadu lo yiraisin adabeba avdi Moshe. Why were you not scared to speak like that about Moshe? Do you know who he is? You already don't know who he is. Which is very interesting. And of course, the result of this reprimand from God to Miriam is what? She became, a mitzoraat, and she got tzaraat, and she had to stand outside the camp for 7 days, etc., etc. Now, also we find at Harasinai number 6, Lech emu lahem, shuvu lachem la'ohaleichem, go back to your tents, says Moshe to the Jewish people, he told to the Jewish people, va'ata, but you, pa'amodim adi, but you have to stay here with me, va'adabra elecha, because I'm going to stay with you, I'm going to speak to you. In other words, Moshe was not able to return to his tent in the way that the other people did, and this is seen as a reference to his return to being with his wife. He was never able to have any kind of relationship with his wife physically for the rest of his life once he got the nevuah that he got as Moshe Rabbeinu, which is what Miriam was complaining about. Number 7, Ra'inu ki yidaba Elokim, the people said, we've seen that God can speak et ha'adam with a person, v'chai, and he can live. In other words, we have no doubts as the people that God was communicating with you, with Moshe. How do the people know that? We'll get there. And finally, I brought you a very interesting Gemara from Yevamos, which the Rambam is also going to bring, which is as follows: Ketani, Kedetania, Kol Anaviim Nistaklu Baspeklaria She'enu Meira. Every other Navi saw through a glass which was unclear, and Aspeklaria She'enu Meira is either like a opaque glass. So you see, you know, like the glass that they have on bathrooms and things like that. You can see shapes inside, but the whole point is you're not meant to be able to see completely inside. You can see just through the glass. However, Moshe Rabbeinu nistakel v'aspeklaria me'ira. Moshe Rabbeinu saw through a crystal clear glass. There are others that explain that aspeklaria she'ena me'ira is much more like a mirror. That when a Navi looked through the aspeklaria she'ena me'ira, what he was seeing to a significant degree was a reflection back of him or herself. I.e. a lot of their own brain was interfacing in the way that they were understanding that message. So it was, and you get this with glass sometimes as well, it has a reflective quality. Sometimes if the sun's shining the wrong way, all it does is reflect, and you can't actually see through it at all. Whereas Moshe Rabbeinu was completely clear, completely without any kind of interference or reflection. He himself was not part of the picture at all. What? Ask Claria. I knew that. Okay, fine. Although Aspeklaria is a nice name for a little girl. I've never heard of a girl called Aspeklaria. Actually, that would be what's your English name, right? Actually, that would be a beautiful two names, Aspeklaria Meira. That would be a great name if you think your daughter's going to be a serious Nevi'ah. Okay, fine. Yeah, it is a good name to live up to. Perhaps it's easier just to be called Sprinter and get on with it. Fine. Number 9. Now, the Rambam goes on to, in the second part of the seventh Ikka, to give the differences between Moshe Rabbeinu and a normal Navi. Okay? So let's have a look, because he's going to use this psukim that we've just seen now. So let's read this very quickly. I'm going to come back now to the seventh Ikka. I'm going to tell you, Kinevuas Moshe, Nivdala Minevuas Kol HaNaviim, it was completely different from every other Navi, the Arba Hevdelim, with four major differences. Ahevdel Arishon, difference number one. Ki eizah navi sheyiya, whatever navi you're talking about, other than Moshe Rabbeinu, lo yidabe Hashem imo ela al yidei emtsa'i. God always spoke to that navi through an intermediary, malach. Uba Moshe b'lo emtsa'i, and Moshe had no emtsa'i, k'moshe amar, as it says, peh el peh adaber bo. Like my mouth goes directly on his mouth. This is actually the image of no intermediaries. It's like breathing yourself into the other person. It's almost like, and it's actually very interesting, the creative act when you think about God creating Adam Harishon. He like breathed into his nostrils the nefesh, the neshama, this idea of God's quote unquote mouth breathing into the nose of Adam Harishon, into the mouth of Adam Harishon. It's a similar idea of God, if you like, breathing himself, kibiyochel as it were, into the mouth of Moshe Rabbeinu, so that now it's inside Moshe Rabbeinu, and it's just going to come straight out. Yes.
How did other prophets have intermediaries?
Malachim. That's what it means. They're coming through a system of drip feed. It's no, you're not connecting with the real original source. Ha'avdel Hasheni. The second difference is ki kol navi loy tavoehu hanavua ela be'eis Hashena. All of the Nevi'im only got nevu either when they were asleep. Tamosha Amavakama becomes as in many places, Bachalom Halila, in a dream in the light. Bayachaloim, or he dreams, Bachalom Chazoni Laila, all these examples. The Harem is a Hainian, there are many such examples. Or Bayom, or during the day, Achashitipol Tardema, when they actually fell into some kind of fit, some kind of blackout, as we said last time. Al Hanovi, that fell down the Novi. Ubimetsashi is Batlu, Kol Chushavan, all of their physical senses were blocked out. These Panu, Rayonosa Ke'en Shena, and all of their mind was cleared out, if you like, just like when they're asleep. V'zamatzav nikra machazeh. This is called a vision. Umara, or a vision, different kinds of words for vision. V'alav yomar, and it says, b'marot elokim, visions of God. What seems to be happening is their brain, the physical awareness of their brain is shutting down, so that their brain can completely, their imaginative brain, look how your imagination comes alive when you're asleep. If you keep a dream diary, and you write down all the things that you dreamt about the night before, you need to shut down your normal waking senses to bring this imagination alive. That's how normal Nevuah works. Okay? It says like this, Umoshe, but Moshe, Yevoei HaDibur Bayom, he would get his vision by day. Uhu Aimei Bein Shnei HaKruvim, he would stand in front of the Kruvim, K'moshe Yidu Hashem, just like God tells him, V'nodati L'chasham, I'm going to meet you there, V'dibarti Yitchasham, and I'm going to speak to you, okay? And he brings the pasuk in Bamidbar. Every other prophet sees through visions. Because Moshe Rabbeinu received his vision while he was awake, in the middle of the day, perfectly conscious. Whereas every other Navi received their Nevuah in some kind of blackout. Now, Ahavdel Ashlishi. The third difference is, Ki Hanavi Ka'ashi Taveh HaNevuah, when they got Nevuah, even though it was by a vision through a malach, yichalesh mizgoy v'yitmoz mitmogeg binyano, his whole body would break into sort of fits. V'tipol alav eima gedoyle ma'oid, and they would be absolutely scared stiff. It would be scary beyond belief. Kimat she'teitin nashal bigala, they would almost die from the experience of nevuah. Not something that you really wanted to have on a like Thursday afternoon. While you're having afternoon tea. Kamosha Be'er B'Daniel, as we see in Daniel, he brings various other examples. And Psukim, I'm going to skip them a little bit. Just go down a couple of lines towards like four lines up from the end of that paragraph. But Moshe Einu came. That's not true with Moshe. Eliyahu Ve'eihu Hadibur V'Loyisigeu Retet B'Shumpanim. He was not in the slightest scared. V'Hu Omer, that's why it says, V'Dibur Hashem El Moshe Panim Apanim, God spoke to Moshe face to face. Kashi Dabe Ishal Reyehu, just like you speak to your friend. Return Alama, what does that mean to the Rambam? Kamaisha like people al ha'adam charada. Just like when you speak to your friend, you're not completely freaked out. Unless you've got a really freaky friend. Midibu Chaveru, from speaking to your friend. Kainu, alava shalom, that's true with Moshe as well. Loy haya necharad min adibur. In other words, when the Torah says he spoke to God like you speak to your friend, it means he spoke to God, not like casually, but there was no sense of dread or awe or fear or terror which came upon him. Just like when you're chatting to your friend, that's how you feel on a normal situation. Even he was face to face with God, which sounds pretty scary to me. This was in order this is a very important line, to increase his ability to connect through intellect. Yes. No, until he got into the kind of mold. At the beginning, it was very scary for Moshe Rabbeinu because he didn't realize quite who he was yet. Moshe Rabbeinu was told at the burning bush to take his shoes off. The Mefarshim understand taking your shoes off, meaning you are now ceasing to be a normal human being like other human beings, and you are going to be online 24/7. You have to be ready for what you're going to experience. And almost the first thing that happens to Moshe Rabbeinu immediately after that burning bush episode is he goes and checks into an inn for the night, and God comes to try to kill him. Remember that? We talked about it in the podcast. So what do you mean God's trying to kill him? God's just sent him to do a job. Why is he coming to try and kill him? The answer is that God appeared without Moshe being ready for it because he felt that, okay, it was nice. I saw God at the burning bush. You know, we'll deal with that when it has to be dealt with. No, the answer is that's it. From now on, you have to learn that you're constantly, 24/7, available for Nevuah on this level, and he had to bring himself up to that level. So by the time he got to Har Sinai, he was the Moshe Rabbeinu that you know and love. But yes, he didn't start that way. He started a little baby, in a basket. Yeah.
maybe to a topic, but because he had to separate from his wife, he had two sons, and he gets to fulfill the mitzvah of having a
Oh, he's actually one of the proofs for the Shita of Beis Shammai that says that you actually fulfill the mitzvah by two sons. There's a debate about that. One view is that he did fulfill the mitzvah, but the other view is, well, he didn't, but he couldn't. But that wasn't his fault. You know, when we need to fulfill a mitzvah, but for whatever reason that mitzvah is unable to be fulfilled, look, a person who, for whatever reason, didn't have children, even if they were married, or didn't get married, also didn't fulfill the mitzvah. It's not their fault, You can't always, he had other things to do. The question is whether, she was ready for that. Did she know what she was getting herself into? And how that affected his sons as well, which is another interesting question, but that's not for now. Finally, he says, Ahavdala Ravi, the fourth difference, all of the Nevi'im could not choose when they wished to have Nevuah. It's God that chose. Sometimes the Navi could stand there for years trying to get yourself in the right mood, trying to connect, to make this connection. Remember we said last time that the Rambam says the Jewish view of Nevuah is you can do everything you can. Ooh, where's my thing? Great, thank you. You can do whatever you can to push your brain up to that level, and you will get there if you try hard enough, says the Rambam. But God can always turn off the taps. That's the deal with Nevuah. Nevuah doesn't have to happen. You can stand there for years waiting for it to happen. Sometimes you can ask the Navi over the page to page 3. Sometimes you can ask the Navi to give you some Nevuah. But Yamod, and he'll stand there actually Nevuah. Until he gets to the Nevuah, but achayami, maybe days, or achachadoshim, maybe months later. Or lo yudiyahu asaklal, or they won't know at all. In other words, don't think going up to a normal Navi is like, oh come on, tell us the lottery numbers. You're a Navi, you should know. The answer is, no, it doesn't work that way. You know, I get Nevuah when I get Nevuah, and if I don't get it, I won't get it for years and years and years and years. It's interesting, the 38 years that Moshe Rabbeinu was offline, of the 40 years, Moshe Rabbeinu was only online the first year and the last year. Well, when you read the Pesukim, it's quite clear that those 38 years are spent wandering around in a rather different state. Then they say that he was back on a normal Navi. But when he was online, he wasn't like this. Someone who prepares himself in every possible way, and they purify their thoughts. Just like Elisha did, Ba'amar, and he says, "Atakuli menagein, bring me some music, let me get myself in the mood." He's a normal navi. And then he got nevuah. Ein zehechrechi, doesn't have to happen. They get nevuah. Just because they prepare themselves. Or Moshe Rabbeinu, but Moshe Rabbeinu, kasha rotza, when he wanted. Okay, Amar, he said, "Imdu, stand there." And I'm going to go and ask God right now. In other words, Moshe Rabbeinu was able to access God anytime Moshe Rabbeinu wanted. Va'amar, and it says, you can't go into meet God anytime. Va'amar, and the Chazal explained, Aaron's not allowed to go in anytime. He can only go in on Yom Kippur, when he prepares himself. But Moshe is not prevented at any time from meeting God. Fine. That's the end of the seventh ikka, the ram. You can see how much he's written there compared to how much he normally writes. What you get out of that, really, is that the Rambam is trying to explain to you not to think what most people think, which is that Moshe Rabbeinu was an even bigger Navi than everybody else. Because he says that's just exactly what I don't want you to think. Turn over to page 4 for a second. I want to show you, yes.
I understand like your point about thinking, but my question is, why is it so important for us to understand that it's in the Ikra?
Next time. That's for next time. We have to learn a lot of Moreh Nevuchim to understand what the Rambam is driving at, and why this is one of the Ikra. Because if this is just a preparation for Torah Min HaShamayim, okay, that's nice. You could have put it as all one big Ikra with Torah Min HaShamayim. In other words, you want to really trust that the Torah we have is really from God. So don't worry, Moshe Rabbeinu was really accurate. It's fine. But he doesn't say that. He says, first you have to understand the whole nature of what Moshe Rabbeinu did and how he was the biggest planet brain on planet Earth. Yeah? And he had no emotions and he had no this and he was not physical, he was a malach, etc. It seems that we have to understand that independently from Torah Min HaShamayim. In fact, I'll go even further and drop a little hint. That when the Rambam actually does describe Torah Min HaShamayim next week and says what Moshe Rabbeinu actually did with in Ikka number 8 with Torah Min HaShamayim is Moshe, he says, acted as a scribe and he just wrote down every single thing that God told him. Well, that's a bit of a letdown. Like, why do you need to be the greatest human intellect that will ever exist to take dictation? On the contrary, I would have thought I would really rather have somebody who is a lot less intelligent to take down dictation, because the more intelligent you are, the more likely you are to change things and argue and to say, well, is that what you really meant? And that's not it. And so it seems actually that when we get to Torah Min HaShamayim, it's a completely different picture of Moshe Rabbeinu than the one that we have in Ikka number 7, which is not yet Torah Min HaShamayim. So we will deal, Mu, with your question, which is why do I have to understand this Ikka so well? And we'll see what's going on. Now look at page 4 for now, and I want to show you two more sources. The first is a very short one, in number 11. Says the Rambam, it's just a one-liner. In my opinion, says the Rambam, the term prophet is applied to Moses and other men only in the both terms of homonyms. Homonyms are words that sound the same, may even be spelled the same, but they are completely different words. A bit like bat. Okay? There are bats that fly around the room, and there are bats that you play cricket with. And if you use the wrong ones, it don't work. Okay? Don't turn around and say to me, yeah, but there must be a link between bat and bat. The answer is no. They're just two completely different words that happen to have the same spelling and the same pronunciation, but don't even try and find a connection between them. That's a homonym. The Rambam is telling you, Avraham Avinu was called a Navi. That's nice. And Moshe Rabbeinu was called a Navi. That's nice. But don't think that those two words have got anything to do with each other. They are completely unrelated words.
They do. They're
the same thing.
Except they're not, though. He wants to tell you, it's not the same word. It is the same word. But the concept, when he talks about the Navi of Moshe, and the Navi of Yeshaya HaNavi, he says it's not a question of degree. Moshe is bigger than that. It's completely different. Yes.
I'm having a hard time swallowing this. In Hebrew, especially like the Torah, they have each word in something very, very precise.
Right.
So, if this is true, why would the Torah use two different words to describe?
Maybe the word Navi means two different, completely different things.
Is there any other example of a word? Or maybe
the Rambam saying, look, etymologically, it is the same word, okay? Maybe it's not like that and that, okay? But the Rambam is saying that for want of a better word, we're using the word Navi for Moshe Rabbeinu as well.
So he's reinterpreting what it means.
No, he's saying from the Psukim in the Torah describing the Nevuah of Moshe Rabbeinu, he's saying it's quite clear to you that the Torah is telling you that it means something different. Don't be just like when the Torah says God has a hand, and you know that's not what it means. And just when the Torah says that God spoke to Moshe, and you know that that's not what it means. Similarly, when it says Moshe was a Navi, you know that's not what it means. That's what the Rambam said. And don't think he does, because he doesn't. When it says Yeshayahu was a Navi, that's this. But when Moshe was a Navi, that's something completely different. What is it? That's really for next week. Okay, which we'll get to. And the last source I want to look at you to now is a little source from the Abarbanel, who really sums it all up. The Abarbanel wrote a commentary on the Moreh Nevuchim, and I brought you just a short passage from the Abarbanel here. When he says as follows, in number 12, in his guide, the Rambam did not mention the four distinct features of Moshe's prophecy stated in the Mishnah Torah. The Mishnah Torah, which I didn't bring you, which was source number 10, he basically goes over again in his Halacha Sefer, which is even more interesting. Why does Daniel say in Halacha the differences between Moshe and other Nevi'im? He includes a whole halacha. No, because the Rambam has a section of the Mishnah Torah called Hilchis Yisodi HaTorah. The halachas are the foundations of the Torah, in which he includes again a replay like he did in the Yud-Gimel Ikrim of the differences between Moshe and other Nevi'im, with very slight differences. He talks about his separation from his wife, etc. He says he didn't bother doing that again in the Moreh Nevuchim. Why? Because all four points arise from a single concept found in the guide. He doesn't need to do it again, because it's all based on one fundamental thing. That Moshe's prophecy did not involve the imaginative faculty. It is the imaginative faculty that caused the cessation of the other prophet's senses, such that they couldn't prophesy only while dreaming. They could prophesy, rather, only while dreaming or in a vision. And it caused their prophetic message to be enshrouded in metaphors and allegories. Likewise, the fear that they experienced came from the reaction of the imagination when receiving the prophetic apprehension, which is frightening to it. Think of what it feels like to speak to God. Imagine what it's like to speak to God. And of course you immediately realize that it will be absolutely terrorizing. But once you don't have to imagine or feel anything, then it's not. Likewise, the fear they experienced came from the reaction of the imagination when receiving the prophetic apprehension, which is frightening to it, and the need to involve the imaginative faculty led to the requirement of preparation for each prophetic event. Thus, by mentioning this one fundamental concept in the guide, the Rambam effectively included the four distinctions which are written in the Mishnah Torah. Everything, it seems to be, is pointing in one direction. So what we need to know from the seventh Ikkar is that Moshe was only intellect, pure and simple intellect, nothing more, nothing less. Okay? And that's why he was not scared, and that's why he was not asleep, and that's why he spoke face to face, or mouth to mouth, etc., etc. All of them are coming from the same idea. And next time, Be'ezrat Hashem, I want to explain to you why that's such an important ikkar. Why this concept of intellect is not just a nice idea, but it's fundamental to the idea of Judaism so much. Yeah?
In the Hebrew for that, you say Moshe, and you use the word sechel, but wouldn't it also be
death? He uses the word sechel. Well, the truth is, all of this was already written in Arabic. So it's translated. He translated in the word into seichel in source number one. Okay, the Baranel was written in Hebrew, as far as I'm aware. But the source number one was originally in Arabic. The difference between seichel and das is important, though, because das is really information. Okay, whereas seichel is cognition. Seichel is a process, is the ability to process something, as opposed to the amassing of knowledge and data banks. It's not data. It's, I don't know, if I knew enough about computers, I'd tell the difference between this kind of memory and that kind of memory or something like that. But I don't, so I won't even try. Okay? So that's that. Next time we'll deal with that. Someone asked a question about Bilam last time. You did. I found you an answer. Okay? It's nothing to do with this week's share, but it's in last week's share. But in number 13, the Abarbanel also talks about Bilam, and he actually says that the Rambam's understanding of Bilam is that he didn't have Nevuah. And he disagrees with the Chazals that said that the Rambam and the Bilam had Nevuah, that the Bilam was a magician, he was a Kosem. That's how he was able to do what he was able to do, and that's how he's able to do it even though he wasn't able to do this. And we can talk about more of it, but he deals with it directly here. I thought of you when I found this, and I thought, aha! This is the answer. I just couldn't remember who'd asked the question. Okay? So in fact, he actually says, look on the last three lines of this source. He says, "Ulefi ze," I know it's slightly difficult to read Rashi scripts. "Ulefi ze lo yaskim harav." The Rambam obviously doesn't agree. He says, "In mashekos of Chazal aloy kam Navi oy be Yisrael kamoshe." The Chazal say there was never another Navi like Moshe. Be Yisrael, in the Jewish people, there was never a Navi. No kam. Aval be umas ha'olam kam, but there was in the non-Jews. Umanun, who is that? Bilam. That was the Chazal. Chazal said that. The Rambam doesn't accept that chazar. The Rambam doesn't feel obligated to accept every chazar. Just like we don't paskin like every opinion in halacha. We don't follow every opinion in hashkafa either. And therefore he says, he clearly holds that, ki hine harav yisbah shaloi haya navi. He wasn't a navi at all. Ki im adavi baruch hakodesh. He spoke with some lower level of inspiration, which he was able to access without the need to go through the Nevuah process, which explains how he can be an unrefined individual and not do any of the things that a Navi has to do in order to be a Navi. Thought I'd give you an answer to that, so that you don't leave feeling disappointed. So I'm going to leave it there, even though we're a few minutes early. And next week, please God, we will deal with the centrality of this issue to Judaism.